Uncle Gordy is here this hour, Gordon Duff, the editor-in-chief at Veterans Today, and we've been talking through email and so forth since last night about the shootdown of the Russian surveillance plane. You all know the story by now, and it is generally conceded that Syria accidentally shot down the Russian surveillance plane. There's a reason for that, and there's much more behind that reason to that that we need to talk about. I want all of you to understand the bigger picture here, and there's no better source than Gordon Duff. Hello, Gordon. Welcome back. These are not good circumstances over there, and we'll see. It's very odd, and we will get there in our conversation. The behavior of Vladimir Putin, I picked up on that immediately when his comments came out, and I wasn't made very comfortable, frankly, by it at all. Anyway, go ahead. I'm not hearing you, Gordy, if you're there.
I had muted myself out here so that my coffee making and dog barking wouldn't go out, which I think is maybe the most charming part of the show.
That's called local color. Local color. It's fine.
What our job should be is to let people know why people should care the way we care. And we look at things differently. Other than as a journalist, and I mostly write for journals, I'm an intelligence analyst and advisor. I'm more retired now than I had been, but my clients had mostly been governments. And
Gordy's retired from the neck down. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but the issue to some extent is, I think, from our collective upbringing as Americans. We have this feeling of right and wrong, of wanting the Cowboys to win, you know. And then later in life, of course, we began wondering exactly how good were the Cowboys. And I'm not so sure I wanted to be one of them after all. But in this case, we have tried to build out of different people good guys. Now, if you've worked in military or intelligence to any extent, or nearly as good, if you've worked in investment banking, commodity trading, all of these things give you a look at a very different world than the public sees, a world of where there isn't so much black and white, good guys or bad guys. But the undercurrent is one of entropy that TV shows like X-Files, some of the very sinister shows that and conspiratorial shows, that the real life, that we see a mocking shadow of the conspiracy world in what we find on the internet. And I think one of the things I enjoy most about Alex Jones in InfoWars isn't that anything he says is true, which he's less accurate than a broken pocket watch, but that he mocks the reality out there. The kind of things that, if we go back into American history, when you talk about the bandit bankers of today, and then you go back to the golden era when it was the robber barons. Well, the robber barons were a problem for Americans because we ate filthy food. We lived in absolute disease. There were no public schools, no clean water of any kind, no minimum wage, virtual slavery for people. You know, hot dogs were made out of, we had this Soylent Green talk in our last show. But working class Americans live like animals. Anyone that owned a farm could be wiped out and become destitute at a second's notice. There were no protections. The government, as it continues to do, involved itself in one foreign adventure after another, being sucked in or dragged in. The American Civil War, and of course, we've managed to glorify and rewrite all of these things as struggles. We had to struggle to end slavery. The Civil War had nothing, whatsoever to do with slavery. The Spanish-American War, Teddy Roosevelt and crawling up whatever hill that was.
San Juan Hill.
Yeah. Had nothing to do with that. Nothing whatsoever. And if you look at a single family that was behind everything, a bad guy, a motivating cause behind everything during American history or even a couple hundred years before, One, we stuck on at VT. And at VT, we do study groups looking at how much history has been rewritten and falsified, how much of what we were always taught to believe was right out of a Matrix movie, how everything we were told, the most basic things were utterly false. The most basic parts of the founding of America is that from the foundation of the Constitution, one family and one family above all has controlled this country's destiny. And anyone that stood against it faced the consequences. And these were brave people. Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson. I'm a big fan of Andrew Jackson. The issue has always been not just central banking, but with central banking comes debt slavery, control of all assets, and eventually any country that's controlled by a central bank becomes part of a game where they're drawn into endless wars, endless cycles of investment, growth, collapse, and poverty, one after the other. Assets are built, assets are stripped. Assets are built, assets are stripped. Income, standard of living is raised, then it's all taken away. For anybody here that's over 20 years old, they've seen one of those cycles done in 2007, 2008. An election was rigged in 2000, had nothing to do with the supposedly weak Al Gore. What it did have to do is with the Warburg family. Who are the Warburgs? You know, the Warburgs are the people that gave us the First World War. The Warburgs are the people that brought the U.S. into the war.
Very interesting word construct, Warburg. Fits perfectly.
Well, Warburg's a little town in Germany. In the 1700s, a family, a banking family, and by ethnicity, Sephardic Jewish banking family.
That's a shocker.
That had been around for 500 years, that had most recently been living in Venice, had relocated itself to Germany.
The Great Migration.
And in companion with other families of similar background, managed to gain control of the currencies and then governments of every nation in Europe and engineered the Napoleonic Wars, certainly the War of 1812, matter of fact, to an extent, the American Revolution, the American Civil War, and then for 80 years or more, the United States fought a war against taking on a central bank, fought a war to stay independent. Now, the Warburgs bought their way into America through American companies. The Warburgs owned J.P. Morgan entirely. He was their guy. They owned the Harriman family, who controlled most of the railroads in the U.S. They developed the West to the extent that the West was developed. When we talk about the genocide of Native Americans, or as we called them in my youth, the American Indian, that was the Warburg family. It was even, if we come down to this, it was the Sephardic Jewish Warburg family that put Adolf Hitler into power through the Harriman family, the Walkers, and the Bush family, that financed what there was of the Holocaust. And there are, historical questions about that, and we don't need to go into those.
They built all those labor camps for the German war effort. Okay.
Yeah, all of those. They controlled the Rockefeller family. They controlled everything, all capital, all banking, all currency, all major business in the United States fell under the Warburgs and their banking partner families. Given that view of history, where, and we are all led to that same area when we try to look at nation states and the development of the colonial era and what Great Britain and France were and how the European nation states developed through the Middle Ages, and we define the Renaissance, those of us who supposedly study history. And we begin seeing that the materials we're dealing with were censored, rewritten, and re-engineered to give us an utterly, it's like watching anime. It's a cartoon version of where we came from. First, there were the Romans. They built all those big buildings. They shut everything down. Things went really bad. And then Christianity saved us all. Then there was the Reformation. Everybody became a Protestant. We went out and conquered all those nasty, dark-looking people, started building factories, had a couple of unpleasant wars, and now everything's okay. That's essentially what we've been going. You don't have to go to school anymore.
No. Just print it all right there.
That's the cartoon version of absolutely everything. And the reality is far closer to science fiction, where we're being led onto spaceships and turned into alien burgers. The reality is way, way, way closer to that. Over the last 24 hours, what I wanted to do over the last 24 hours, reviewing what's going on, and mostly because I have to deal with it, and also because Jeff and I, to an extent, try to find some hope that there's some growth in mankind, that there will be a movement of enlightenment, that people who are heroic and honest and decent that are not going to be murdered, which is that are bulletproof, because if you're heroic and honest, you better be bulletproof pretty much, that they're going to spring up. And among those hopes, and even Jeff had a little hope for Donald Trump. I knew Trump's history, and we went through this a while ago, and I said, Jeff, it's going to land on you that who this guy works for and who he is, and there's nothing real there. He's no more real than Alex Jones. No more real.
Not a bad parallel to compare. And you were 100% right, of course. Yeah.
I didn't want to be right.
I didn't want to be wrong. We all hoped, those of us who really cared, that he was not giving us an endless line of bullshit for a year and a half in the campaign. But that's what it turned out to be.
For the rest of us, that guy's been Vladimir Putin.
That's it.
Now, when the FBI knocks on my door and asks me, why do you like the damned Russians so much? And I say this, they've got a president there. He may be 4 inches shorter than me, but he'd be a pretty tough guy to take on. He generally says what he means. He fights for his own country. He stands up for things as much as possible, as much as anyone on this earth. Vladimir Putin stands for things that are right.
Now, follow where this is going, dear friends. All right.
And today, Jeff and I are looking at each other because I have an email. I stay in contact with Russia on a regular basis. Veterans Today has a good readership in Russia. I write for journals in Russia. You'll find I write for New Eastern Outlook, or if you look in Sputnik or Pravda or RT and do the search there, you'll see how many times I've been on TV there or written for them or worked on analytical projects. But I'm as published in Russia. I've made at least 20 documentaries in Russia for television stations other than RT and Sputnik as well, about a variety of subjects from American politics to the war in Afghanistan. But I work there as much as anywhere else, mostly because I can't work in my own country because the things I say are absolutely banned here, and they're not banned there. So I work in Syria. I'm on TV pretty much every day in Iran. And I'm on TV pretty much all the time in Russia and other places, but not so much here and very little in Britain, because the things I'm saying right now don't fit in a world where everything you're told is untrue and scripted. And, you know, it isn't that long ago that people tried to, and this isn't, we're not making this up, tried to kill Jeff. Because as if anything, the person who reaches more people than anybody else is Jeff. And simply put, they decided to get rid of him, run him off the road, have first responders come up and kill him. And if it weren't for unusual circumstances, they would have gotten away with it. And we are hoping, since we talk about this with some regularity, there will not be another attempt to do this, because this is the worst thing for both of us in days like today. And we have time to get into days like today. I don't need to live forever. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I'm 70 years old. I could say I've done enough. Well, I can tell you, after today, reading my emails from Russians, we shamed of Vladimir Putin. We were just, the term was used by one Russian, Mr. Bukhanov, we were punched in the face by Israel, and Vladimir Putin did nothing about it.
Shocking. I sent you that email. I was in shock when I sent it. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I do believe it, but it was a shocker.
And if you go through the stories today that I've written and into the comment boards, I recommend you do it and read it. Now, the point isn't making it to make you feel worse, but essentially what we had happen, and I'll make this as concise as possible, meaning it'll take about 10 minutes. A couple of days ago, there were meetings inside Russia. Russia, Syria, Iran, and Turkey are holding a parallel peace process to the one that the U.S. is supposedly involved in Geneva. What the U.S. had done a number of years ago was hired a number of phony representatives of Syrian armed groups to be political representatives of the Syrian opposition. They did this back in 2013, just randomly picked out people who were morally pliable, people who needed work, needed a little recognition. You know, everybody's life's going well, and the U.S. comes by and says, we'll give you $100,000 and start paying your airline expenses and put you in an apartment somewhere. And you're working in a doner kebab shop for, you know, €7 an hour. You're going to take the dollar. I don't hate any of these people for that. That's fine. The problem is, this is 2013. By January 2014, the opposition in what really was a Syrian civil war was pretty much defeated by al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, and ISIS. Reason being, ISIS and al-Qaeda were like bad boy pirates. Why stay with the little pinky weak guys when you can be with the really, really bad guys? Plus, the really, really bad guys got millions and millions of dollars from Saudi Arabia. They got weapons from Israel. They got Israeli satellite intelligence. They got the best community.
Anything they wanted, anytime they wanted it. It was almost like room service.
And instead, the U.S. was offering people, we'll send you to training inside Turkey, where we'll send special forces people over there to scream at you, give you guns, and make you march back and forth. Instead, the Saudi Arabians just gave them money, tell them, go ahead and take the territory, kidnap whatever women you want, rape, pillage, kill, cut off heads. We don't care. Do whatever you please. It sounded a lot better. So by January 2014, most of the real leadership of the Free Syrian Army had fled, just left, headed into Europe where they're running restaurants and driving cabs or whatever they're doing. They left. Everybody else went to ISIS and al-Qaeda. And every few years, the U.S. tried to, and it's been 5 years that this process has been going on. Uh-huh. The U.S. has tried to. At one point, we spent $250 million training a new Free Syrian Army and got 38 recruits. If you remember this, this is in 2015. It was announced during a meeting with the Atlantic Council in January 2015. After 10 days of being released from their training camps in Turkey, the 38 people had all taken their weapons and joined ISIS and utterly disappeared. So the U.S. thought, what we can do, we're going to hire the Kurds. And the Kurds are, how to describe the Kurds? The Kurds are a people that Americans had a soft spot in our hearts for the Kurds. The Kurds are from that Netherland, a little bit of Iran, a little bit of northern Iraq, big chunks of Turkey, a little bit of Syria, but they don't have any government of their own. They've been spit on, kicked around. A lot of them are Christian. They've been close allies to the U.S., meaning they've been betrayed by the United States over and over and over, and they never get tired of it. And I have to admit, as much as I don't care for the side they're on, I love the Kurdish people. I've lived with them. I've worked with them and spent a lot of time there. And they're enjoyable people. They became America's surrogates. A Kurdish army with thousands of women fighters and a promise that they could make their own nation. But in doing so, the U.S. convinced them, you know, you can have a bigger nation than you could originally wanted. All you have to do is move the real Syrians and the real Iraqis, the Arabs, the ones who would always live there forever, kick them off their land and take their land. We'll let you do that.
A Kurdish homeland. Yeah.
A Kurdish homeland made out of other people's property.
Sounds kind of like an overlay of Palestine, doesn't it?
Like
just
Palestine?
Just a little.
Or like the Western United States.
That too. We're going to go through this. They got a lot to get to the punchline here. This is very important what Gordon is laying out. There's a major, I don't know if it's a shift, change in direction, but there was a very major revelation about Vladimir Putin today and international Zionist power.
Well, and what we had essentially come to believe, more or less, for those people who really see things in this country, and those of you out there, and God only knows how many it is, you're all capable of it, and it's based on what you're ready to learn and what information is available to you, what credible information, and how much courage and honesty you have. But for those of us in the business, when we look at France, Macron, we see a despicable slime ball there. When we look in Britain at Boris Johnson, we see, and Theresa May, an absolute despicable government there.
Yeah.
Utterly and absolutely slaves to Mr. Warburg and those banking families who are too often misrepresented as being the Jews or the Israelis or whatever. The banking families, yes, they're Jewish. Yes, there is a country named Israel, largely stolen from the Palestinians. But more or less, and this is where we go back to this historical epic again. We go back to 1905 in Russia and to an odd revelation. And this is one of the stranger things. And mentioning this, of course, everything has been done to make what I'm about to say a vile, criminal, and poisonous act committed only by the worst possible people in the world. And hey, if I got to be one, what the heck? You know, I've done worse stuff. Well, supposedly, and this is a vile and false statement, that in 1905, the Russian secret police discovered a set of documents called the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And what these protocols said is that a group of families who were, in this case, Hasidic and Sephardic and some Ashkenazi, banking families from the Middle Ages who had been thrown out of Britain in the 1200s, been thrown out of France, thrown out of Portugal, who were only welcome in the Islamic world. You know, the only place in Europe that Jews were welcome in the 15th century was under the rule of the Ottoman Turks. It was the only safe place they had left, the only place they were welcome. But by the time of the Napoleonic Wars, five of these families that now control the central banks of almost every nation on earth gained control of the governments and currencies of every armed nation, And within these documents, this invented, fabricated, fake document, which describes specifically how they were going to create a system of alliances that was going to, from 1905 onward, cause century after century of constant warfare where the nations of Europe and Asia would be at a continual state of war from each other, while these banking families would profit, how Christianity, Western culture would be destroyed, ground to nothing, while all of the people, but their people, would be eventually enslaved, controlled, and propagandized to where they were capable of nothing but grinding each other and themselves into the ground.
And now look what we have. Drooled down, tattooed millennials. This is no accident. None of it.
Oh, YouTubers. I'm more of the MTV people, you know.
Yeah. The Learned Elders Playbook, one of the most incredible documents really ever to surface, if you look at it for what it is, and then compare it to the timeline of history since it was first surfaced.
And then, of course, if you were to notice or say anything about this, you have become an anti-Semite a supporter of Adolf Hitler. And, of course, this is the Adolf Hitler that the Warburg family put in charge, created, hired him, and financed him. And we can prove this absolutely all day long. Who owned Auschwitz? Auschwitz belonged to I.G. Farben. Who owned I.G. Farben? The Rockefeller family. Who financed the Rockefeller family? Paul Warburg. It's Paul Warburg's real first name, Levi. But why would someone Jewish own Auschwitz?
That's mind-boggling, isn't it? Just amazing. Speechless.
I don't want to answer that.
No, don't go there.
So, poor Jeff and I, being the dumb schmucks, which, you know, really is a jeweler or silversmith when we use the terminology, but dumb schmucks that we are, we're thinking that and hoping beyond hope that Vladimir Putin was going to stand up somehow, that Russia, with their powerful nuclear weapons, with people who withstood the Nazi hordes, that the people who were capable of endless sacrifice, the people who stood by the Syrians, the people, of course, that that Donald Trump says he loves so much but manages to throw so many sanctions at. But at some point, Vladimir Putin was going to draw a line in the sand, being someone who has the best nuclear weapons in the world, really great aircraft, the best air defense equipment in the world. And I mean, absolutely hundreds of thousands of just the meanest kids in the world who look for nothing more than landing in Syria and destroying ISIS or carrying that war onto the Golan Heights and restoring Syria. Russia is really last friend in the world to where it should have been. And why Syria? Why do we care about Syria? Syria is not a perfect nation by any means. President Assad's not a perfect guy. You know, the Syrians are corrupt. I've been to Syria. I've worked in Syria. I keep my eyes open. Syria isn't a lot better than the United States. It's better than the U.S., mind you. But that's no longer saying very much. What Syria has done, though, out of nothing at all, tens and hundreds of thousands of Syrians have done without electricity, without water, without ammunition, without decent weapons, and have fought a five-year war against Israel, the United States, France,
Britain, Germany.
Oh, yeah. And won. And done it with nothing and lost thousands. They've done without food. You know, when I call my people there, they're in a hotel lobby at 2 o'clock in the morning living on Wi-Fi, you know. And if they want to eat something, I've got to PayPal them a few dollars so they can go get food. I've seen Damascus when it was surrounded and its water supplies were cut off. The electricity was cut off. You can sit there, you could watch the mortar rounds just bouncing randomly around the city. American-funded freedom fighters bouncing mortar rounds around a town. And of course, any fighting back, if anyone fires back, every bullet fired has hit a brain surgeon or a religious figure or a paralyzed orphan.
The
propaganda. Well, in this case, here's the incidents that happened. Let's outline this. In this meeting in Sochi, we were talking about 16 minutes ago. Nations who don't entirely trust one another. The Syrians have had the Russians turn their backs and allow the Israelis to attack over 200 times and have done nothing in return. And that is not a good partnership. Why has that been going on? And we didn't know it was 200 times until a week ago the Israelis started bragging about it, saying, we've made the Russians back down that many times while we went in. And the Russian media will tell you, supplied air support for ISIS rebels where we attacked not Hezbollah, where we attacked the Syrian Arab army in order to aid ISIS in seizing territory.
Right.
And if there's anybody you don't want to live under their rule, I'd probably think you didn't want to live somewhere under ISIS.
Not to mention, Gordy, the fact that we have been almost full-time involved with extracting, extricating, and otherwise rescuing these subhuman monster killers from any number of venues in Syria. We have been doing that. We, American boys and girls and helicopters and other transport modes, saving their ISIS butts.
And as the ISIS region has diminished 98% in size, and the food they steal from impoverished people to fatten themselves on is a little more difficult to get at, the United States hasn't been able to move them all to the safe havens of Idlib. So the United States has been flying ISIS members out and dropping them off in Afghanistan, where they are there to fight against the Taliban, because America's corrupt government in Kabul isn't able to hold its own. So the U.S., their new policy here, is to move ISIS in. And ISIS, of course, can keep the new government of Pakistan busy and can keep the Taliban fighting. And if they manage to take over Afghanistan and are there cutting off heads and enslaving people in the name of the U.S. or Israel or Saudi Arabia or whoever ISIS is, they're just mercenaries anyway. The U.S. doesn't seem to care because we don't really have a plan except for Warburg's plan. And Warburg's plan started in the 1700s and was written about in 1905. And then let's say, let the rest of them kill each other off and we'll make as much money on it, off it as we can. That's what's going on. Everything you see in the media is to help you take part and support the activity of the Warburgs and to a lesser extent, the Rothschilds and the other families, the five families. They were never Italian. The American mob, the Italians were the hired help. They were the maids, the truck drivers, the hitmen. It was always Meyer Lansky, his gang, and the bankers that ran it all out of Europe. Who ran the Nazis? Who ran it all? Who created the Bolsheviks? They created it all. And it's all been a theater. Well, that theater's coming home to your own neighborhood right now. Our last hope somehow essentially was that Vladimir Putin, the Marlboro man, the horse riding, muscled, judo expert.
Mr. Outdoors, boy, okay.
That somehow when the Israelis decided they were going to come in and hit the part of Syria where the Russians have their naval base and air base, that he would use his S-400 and his two battle cruisers and five frigates and eight nuclear submarines sitting offshore and his air defense battalions and the most modern radars in the world to defend even his own territory. Instead, the Israelis flew right in around, bombed around the city of Latakia, where, of course, the major Russian air base is, and in the process shot down a four-engined Russian surveillance plane. Now, the timing for this is approximately 2 days, 48 hours, after a treaty between Russia and Turkey was made to prevent that last-ditch war in what they call Idlib province, where the Syrian army has been loading up troops and loading up troops and loading up troops, and President Trump has been saying, we're going to not let them go in there and slaughter all of those ISIS terrorists and Al-Qaeda monsters who are now, by American standards, heroic freedom fighters. ISIS?
Yeah.
We have supposedly at least 3,000 troops in Syria fighting against ISIS, while at the exact same time, and you got to wait for it, President Trump claims those same ISIS people we're there to fight are freedom fighters. Now,
This is all true, ladies and gentlemen. If you're not up on it,
you just can't make stuff like this up. Well, the USS Harry Truman is now crossing the Atlantic to come offshore in Syria as well. Now, 48 hours ago, in two regions of Idlib province, there were gas attacks staged. The Russians cited about 2 weeks ago that chlorine gas, concentrated chlorine gas, was brought into Syria by British contractors working for Britain's intelligence agency, MI6. And then over the last 96 hours, film crews were brought in, by the way, entirely from Israel, employed by the Jerusalem Post and the Times of Israel, two primary newspapers. They were flown into Syria. According to journalist who's been interviewing the families, Vanessa Beely, who's, by the way, a very impressive individual, an organization whose spokesperson is Hollywood mogul George Clooney.
Georgie boy.
George Clooney's organization has been kidnapping children within, now, it's a combination of, they've been kidnapping children, plus they've been emptying orphanages. Over the past 48 hours, according to people that we have and the people I'm using, and this is my Fight Club scenario again, Idlib province borders the province of Hatay in Turkey. My guys drive light trucks from the town of Hatay into the town of Idlib. It's about 100 miles or so. And they do deliveries 3 days a week in and out of Syria across that border of small appliances, fruits, vegetables, cigarettes, those kinds of things, for a wholesale company inside Turkey owned by members of the AK party, the ruling party in Turkey that they work for. And while my guys go in and out of there, when they get back to Turkey, they tell me what they had seen. And I can tell you what they tell me they've seen is that 48 hours ago, they witnessed a filming session. It was handled exactly like a Hollywood film, where children were brought out and with combinations while they're filming this, mind you, they're using smoke bombs. But they killed children in a specified area inside of buildings using chlorine gas inside buildings. They loaded them in classrooms, put chlorine gas in the classroom so that they would have victims that they took out and refrigerated to show investigators. And then they took other children and filmed them out on the street, paying them with candy and whatever, but using smoke bombs. And with the smoke bombs only, this organization called the White Helmets and their journalists were running back and forth in this fake chlorine gas, picking up frightened children and running back and forth and being filmed saving and trying to resuscitate these kids. While, of course, they now have a storehouse of real murdered children at the same time. Now, the deal was going to be, and when the Syrian army jumped across the border, they were going to upload all these films to YouTube and send them all to the U.S. media and put them on Facebook, which is where all news goes to President Trump. And President Trump, along with the British and French, were going to order a massive military attack in defense of ISIS and Al-Qaeda against Syria. Except that, and this is the other half of Vladimir Putin, he cut this deal to set up with Turkey a buffer zone and to stop the attack. Well, the problem is they've got these dead kids in storage, our Israeli friends, and they ran this entirely. They murdered what I understand to be 48 children. They filmed all of these other kids. The film is already in the can. It's already taken place. And of course, evidence of what they did, anybody that was around with a phone is filmed them doing this. So it's out there. And YouTube's been, as these films have been uploaded onto YouTube, showing what they've done. Google Corporation's been going in full time with their, and they have an Albanian troll room at Google that does nothing but look for every upload from that region, making sure those videos are wiped off there, showing exactly what the Israelis had done. Well, now, with that new treaty signed, that new agreement between Syria and Russia, they're going to have to do this all over again because those kids' bodies are not going to be in good enough condition. There's no way refrigerating them. They can't freeze them. They can't refrigerate them long enough because all this has been moved back because part of this agreement is there's going to be a buffer zone and the main highways that go through the middle of the rebel area, Turkey has agreed to make sure that they're open. Where the strange part of this agreement is, Turkey has agreed to make sure that the friendly rebels within this area give up their major weapons and withdraw behind a line. The problem is, in this entire buffer area, the friendly rebels in there are 100% ISIS and Al-Qaeda and not friendly at all, and they don't care what Turkey is going to say. So this agreement is going to fall apart in a week, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks anyway.
Right.
The only thing that was important to do was to get in, and this is one of the things that where we give Putin some points. I don't damn people entirely. I have disappointment in people's lack of doing what I do under the circumstances.
Yeah, almost anybody would do. Hey, listen to these three quickies. Putin says Israel didn't down the Russian surveillance aircraft. Putin calls downing of Russian plane in Syria tragic and absolves Israel. Putin seeks to defuse the downing of the Russian plane in Syria. So, strike three, Vlad, on that one.
And everybody in Russia, it's bad enough as Americans, we don't really mind that we have an American president who Russian prostitutes urinate on. We don't care. We have an American president who, after having sex with a 13-year-old girl, according to documents filed in the state of New York in a circuit court there, told the girl she was going to be that she needed to be silent, or we'll kill your family, or I'll kill you like I killed your 12-year-old friend Mary that you don't see anymore. This is from the documents. You just can't make this stuff up. Or who nominates a Supreme Court justice. Now, it's one thing where someone who appears, in this case, quite credible, and who's passed a lie detector test, says that many years ago, the person who chooses to be Justice Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her. Now, that's one thing. Now, the other thing, of course, is that when we look at the Supreme Court and who Kavanaugh really is, and very few of you understand what the actual issues are there, and this is me talking down to people and being bad, so if you're feeling insulted, it's only because I'm here because I intend to insult you because I'm being disrespectful. And I'm being disrespectful for a reason, because I do read my emails and comments and what people say, and it makes me shake my head, oh, just occasionally. Conservatives in the Supreme Court have one basic purpose: eroding your civil liberties. That's it. That's all they do. They turn the power over to the Warburg family, who they all work for, and they are there to stick it to you in the body. And in the whole process, of course, they point their fingers at the evil Negroes and the bad Mexicans crossing the border, and we've got to take care of all. They point the finger elsewhere when 99.99% of the things they do inside the Supreme Court is limit your civil liberties, certainly allow unlimited search and seizure, and provide endless protections for corporations, foreign banks, and organized crime. That's what they're actually doing. And in the process, of course, you can't learn about that unless you read the cases, pay attention, because no media will report this, because the same people that employ these Supreme Court justices own the media, with the rare exception of what you're listening to right now. So your decision making will be based on the fairy tales you've been told all your life, and they're no more than fairy tales. How are we doing with this, Jeff?
Well, you've done very well. We didn't mention one thing, that the Israeli F-16s used the Russian surveillance plane as a form of cover to launch some of their ordnance. And it's kind of like running interference without knowing it, and the guys on the IL-20 paid the price. That's the big problem here.
Wow. And as Jeff pointed out a few minutes ago, when we went to the Russian media last night and this morning, the Russian general staff, their military announced that they're seeking prosecution.
Absolutely.
Criminal prosecution of any Israeli involved in this.
Yeah.
And then we learned this afternoon from Haaretz, and that's the opposition newspaper in Jerusalem, a Jewish newspaper, by the way, which I will tell you, Israel's got better newspapers than we do. But if you, I recommend read Haaretz, H-A-A-R-E-T-Z, by the way, which publishes my stuff and interviews me occasionally, despite the fact that I'm a really bad person. But they explained, and lo and behold, it's like nobody heard this, because the only newspaper in the world, a Jewish newspaper, published this, that when those planes snuck in behind that IL-20 to hit Syrian army facilities on behalf of ISIS, French planes were with them. And not only that, when the Russians reported it last night, the Russians reported that at the same time that their aircraft was hit by a missile, a French frigate, the Auberge, had just fired two missiles into the air only a moment before. And a matter of fact, those were the only missiles anyone had really seen at the time. Now, we're not saying that I don't have proof that an S-200 missile from inside Syria wasn't fired at the F-16s, but I can tell you this that I do know, that Russia, this is a listen carefully moment, Russia and Syria operate air defenses under a combined structure, and that no Syrian air defense missiles, especially S-200s, which have gone through numerous Russian software upgrades, including while I was there, I talked to the people involved in doing that. I've worked in air defense systems. I know exactly how all of them work. You know, it's, you know, one of my background things. It's, you know, I come out of that business. I'm a defense contractor. And Here's the problem. If the Syrian army fired an S-200 missile at Israeli F-16 aircraft, it could not under any circumstances have hit a Russian plane because the air defense, combined air defense system identifies any Russian aircraft as friendly. And they call it an IFF function.
They're constantly broadcasting signals, and the missiles will pick them up. Don't go there.
You couldn't possibly do it. The missiles will not, under any circumstances.
No.
Oh, it's not just that. It gets even better. If you were a country like India or Turkey and you were buying an S-400 missile system and the Russians were flying in to attack you and you tried to shoot with one of their export systems, you tried to shoot down a Russian plane, I assure you Russian missiles will never, ever, 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 ever hit a Russian plane. They cannot do it.
So what we have here is, we got to wrap this up.
The whole story is a lie.
The whole story is a lie. We have a general consensus that it was a Syrian SAM or more that hit the plane. Not true in reality.
Not remotely possible.
Madman Macron and his frigate in the Mediterranean.
Now, when I published this morning the information on how the S-200 system works and how the combined system operates inside Syria, and in particular, since these systems are all around the Russian air base outside Latakia, they are all entirely under Russian command because Russian planes go in and out of that airspace entirely. A matter of fact, this was a Russian airplane going into a Russian base.
It's going in for a landing.
In an air defense environment totally under Russian control where Syrian missiles can never be fired. Because it's always under control, and it's not just under control, it's under the control of an S-400 system that Russia has stationed at that base. Not a 300, not an S-200, it's the most modern deployed air defense system in the world. It's a generation and a half beyond anything the United States has. Absolutely bulletproof. This plane was landing at a Russian base and was supposedly hit by a Syrian missile. Firing at a plane landing on a Russian base, not friggin' possible.
No way.
Technically, the whole thing is a fake story. Totally fake.
Another one.
Who shot down the Russian planes? 90% chance the French did it.
The frogs did it.
Yeah. That would absolutely be the case. Absolutely. And not only this.
20 seconds.
The French were there shooting, and at the same time, during this attack, until that Russian plane was hit, the British had six planes up as a second wave behind this that turned around and landed without dropping their bomb loads because they didn't want to get involved, but they were coming in as well. And all of this, of course, is part of a temper tantrum because those 48 little rotten bodies, those rotting bodies of the small children that the Israelis killed, that they're going to have to go out and murder some more.
Yep. Which I somehow imagine they'll muster up the courage to do.
And my own reaction to this, I'm thinking I've got a dentist appointment at 8:30 in the morning, and I would like to put in my camping gear, and I'd like to just head out somewhere and camp and stare at the water and cook hot dogs or whatever and not think of any of this because it's really not good for you to be angry.
No, it's not. Gordy, thank you. That was really a splendid hour of reality and history as it really happened. All right. We'll talk to you soon. We'll keep watching it. Watch Veterans Today. Thank you, Gordon.
Well, Jeff, it's always a pleasure.
Indeed. All right. You be well. And we'll be right back with more.
Of over 6,000 hours of legendary broadcasts. Subscribe now by taking the link at the top of Rents.com and enrich your mind with the most unique panorama of vital information and the best independent, honest journalism in radio. Look for the Subscribe Now link on Rents.com and give yourself the knowledge you need for these unprecedented times.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time,